And now, here's a word from our sponsor.
It is finished.
Woohoo!
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 28th of March 2013, coming to you from the Gospel Revolution Studios here in Nashville, Tennessee, where we're linking up once again with the founding president of the Gospel Revolution from Freedom Headquarters in beautiful Houston, Texas, Mr. Michael Williams.
Good evening, Bearis Bartlett.
Good evening, Michael.
Yay.
We're sinking at last. I mean, S-Y-N-K.
Yes, we are. And we're sinking, not as in the Titanic. We're sinking, as in it's working.
Phew. It only took a few shows, mate.
Whew, lordy. If it took us that long to get this down, oh, we have an eternity of work to do.
So welcome to the Gospel Revolution, where our thought to you today is this. We don't draw people to the truth by loudly discrediting what they believe, by telling them how wrong they are or how right we are, but by showing them a light that is so lovely that they want with all their hearts to know the source of it. So stay tuned and enjoy the show. You're listening to It Is Finished by Peggy and Jesse Zuniga. If you'd like to know more about them or access some of their music, and they've got some fantastic tracks, Google this, Z-U-N-I-G-A Project, Zuniga Project. They're the very first listing in Google. Go visit them. They're friends of the Gospel Revolution, and we love them all to bits, and just their music is fantastic.
To the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
What was the most interesting thing happened to you this week, Mike?
Well, I had a very interesting week on many different levels. Of course, Bearis, you were here. It was really a wonderful time to be able to have some time with my buddy and my friend, number one. And boy, we had some really great times studying just for hours and hours. We sat and went through some verses in the New Testament that I was looking for some collaboration on, and my goodness, we learned a lot, to say the least. If we'd have just recorded that several hours, we could have broadcast it. I learned also how to cook ribs. It's stupid easy. And for those of you who think you know how to cook ribs, let me tell you, you don't. For those of you who think you can't cook ribs, you can. I got my teacher here, and he taught me. When Barris told me that he was going to fix ribs and show me how to do it, and I would be able to do it, it's like, I'm the host. I have to entertain. I have to kind of let him do what he wants to do. So I'll go along with it. And I've had everybody tell me they knew exactly how to cook them and the restaurant to get them at. And they're always tough. They're just, it's just, I've never had good ribs. But anyway, this whole thing of preparing these ribs, I'm not going to explain any of it to anybody on this PowerCast, but Barris did take me into the kitchen, and I will tell you this: without putting a single shake of salt or pepper, spices or anything on it, and then taking it through Barris's cooking process, which I'm not going to reveal to you,
secret and patented.
I'm telling you, it is just secret beyond all things, and. Maybe in our next life, it'll be like the gospel. It'll be like the mystery that has been revealed. But right now, it's going to stay concealed. And after a certain amount of cooking time, I'm not even going to reveal that. These ribs were brought out back onto the counter, and there was no salt on them. There was no spices of any kind, none of the good old Texas barbecue sauce of any kind. And I took a fork and began to pull away from the bone. There was nothing that was still stuck to the bone on these things. And I took a bite of the most beautiful ribs with no salt, with no pepper, with none of all of the coatings and the bastings and the all of this stuff. Now, all of that got done after this, but I told Barris, I want to taste what the meat tastes like. And I did, and I almost had a meal before he could finish, so.
Hey, you know, there was one big thing I didn't tell you about them ribs. You know what it was?
What was that?
You got to go and buy your favorite sauce, and then you got to empty it out of the bottle. Now, they see the ribs coming out of your oven, so they know you've done this work. So you go buy your favorite barbecue sauce or whatever you want, and then you put it in a glass jar with no label.
Ah, yes.
And let them draw their own conclusion.
Yes, you have prepared this in your own time, in your own place, with a secret jar, with a secret label. I get it.
Yeah, well, you just answer the question with a question. You say, well, what do you think? You know, did you make this? You say, well, what do you think? They see you pulling these ribs, and mate, yeah.
That was a wonderful experience. We also had a marvelous experience because our Saturday night, we had a date. And I took Barris Bartlett out on a date, and we went to the Houston Symphony. Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Unforgettable.
I'll let you tell that part. Since I told the rib story, you have to tell the West Side story.
Well, just one last word on the rib story, and that is we will be unveiling our new website sometime soon, and in that new website, we're going to actually put the Gospel Revolution barbecue rib recipe, and we're going to hide it away there, so you're going to have to go hunting like an Easter egg hunt to find it. Yeah, on Saturday night, Michael said to me, how do you feel about the symphony? And I said, I love it. I just haven't been for years. Anyway, he got the tickets, and we went down to the most glorious symphony hall right in the center of Houston. But what I liked more than anything else was just seeing everyone dressed up. It was lovely. We go in there, and on the screen we watched West Side Story. It's 50 years old now, that musical. And somehow they had stripped out the music from the vocals. So everyone was singing the songs that you used to know. It's all those songs in America, I Feel Pretty, You're So Pretty, and all of those. The original stars were singing them, but the concert orchestra was playing the music behind it, and it was, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven, Mike.
Over 80-piece orchestra. I tried to count them. I underestimated, and I know there was a minimum of 80 pieces in that orchestra. I think it was closer to 90, actually. Terribly inexpensive for such a wonderful, wonderful time. My company was marvelous. West Side Story turned out to be a wonderful musical. Not just a musical, it is a wonderful story.
Michael, there's only one thing left to say, and that is you're such a terrific host. I so thoroughly enjoyed myself with you. I came back like a new man. So thanks, mate, and we're going to do this again soon.
When you're feeling down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the
Gospel Revolution?
Now, Mike, when I was with you down there this last week, you and I sat down and watched a movie about mystics, and it's the movie you've been talking about the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
And it's called, by the way, for any of our listeners, I want you to know this, and I'd love for you to look this up. The name of the movie, it's a documentary, really, not a movie, and documentary's name is With One Voice, With One Voice. You can go to YouTube. So you can get this from anywhere in the world. You can go to YouTube and just put in the top, within inverted commas, or if you're a geek, it's a string called With One Voice, and it'll take you straight to it. And the whole movie's just sitting up there, and you can watch the lot. So you can see what has been the impetus for Michael to start on this journey outside of Christianity. In the past, it's always been inside Christianity, hasn't it, Mike?
Yes, it has. I eventually came to that reality that Christianity is indeed some process of what man must do to have redemption, and virtually all of Christianity. And I finally realized for that reason, we have to take a step outside of Christianity to view the rest of this. Because within confines of any form of Catholicism or Protestantism, there is no view of the gospel whatsoever.
Now, the enlightenment or the revelation or the aha moment, I think we might just call it enlightenment from now on, because everyone in the gospel revolution has had this aha moment. And sometimes in the past, we see that leaders of great religions have had it, be it the Buddha, be it Luther, be it Peter. Peter, in the presence of Jesus, came up with an amazing insight. And Jesus said, well, flesh and blood didn't reveal this to you, Peter, but your Father who's in heaven. Well, for any of us to think that our Father in heaven only reveals that to certain people who meet a certain criteria, in other words, you've got to be good enough to get this up front, is really the height of imbecility. In fact, this movie, this documentary, what we found was all of these mystics had the same, pretty much the same way of explaining things. The only thing they didn't have is any idea of how on earth we all got to be one.
Yes, very true. This is becoming more and more intriguing to me for a lot of reasons. But, you know, in the past, we have compared the gospel to most forms of Christianity. I think we still have a lot of work to do in that, to get down to the nitty-gritty and why the gospel is different from Calvinism, why it's different from Arminianism, why it's different from dispensationalism, why it's different from Catholicism. And we could go on with isms just within Christianity for the next year probably. But this is a task that is in front of us now, and thank goodness Barristus too. We're both very much in sync in this. It's vitally important that we compare the gospel to the mystics and to the other religions of the world. It's fairly easy to compare the gospel to all the other religions, because once you have compared it to Christianity, you've pretty well compared it to all the other religions, because Christianity has an element of all the other religions on earth as far as punishment, judgment, reward, some included, some left out. All of these things are in all of these religions. The thing that is different about the mystic is these mystics come out of all religions, including Christianity. There are Buddhist mystics, there are Hindu mystics, there's people out of the Islamic faith that are mystics. The list just goes on and on. The unifying thing at St. Barris is there is a consistency, regardless of what religion that they come out of, and that is this sudden and overwhelming inclusiveness of themselves and God and all people as being one. This is the overarching revelation. This is their aha moment. This is their moment of clarity. Everything is one. They're all one with God. However, it is at that moment that once they realize they're one with God, that's the moment that the term God falls out of the subject for the mystic altogether, it seems. Not altogether. There are some that do have that term, it seems, still reserved to be able to use for whatever purpose. The interesting thing, as we pointed out in our last program, this is the most peculiar thing that I have found for myself, is that everything that the mystic concludes, I find that the gospel concludes that also. The gospel, apart from Christianity, the gospel concludes that we are one. The gospel concludes the issue of sin is just not even in the mystic experience. There's just not anything about sin. The issue of becoming righteous is not even in the mystic experience. More aware is in the mystic experience, but not more righteous that I can tell anyway. We still have some research to do. Like I said, don't hold me to anything in particular except this is a learning process. But it is baffling to me. All of the mystics affirm the religion they are out of, and they affirm the religions of everybody else on earth. None of the religions affirm them. None of them. A mystic experience in Islam that's saying that we are all one and that no one is higher than the other and there's no issue called sin. That we're one with deity or the universe, and we're all one. That is not the teachings of Islam. They just are not. These are not the teachings of Catholicism. Catholicism would brand this as heresy. The Islamic faith would brand the Islamic mystic as a heretic based on their theology. If you want to see a mystic lose his nirvana, bring up the cross and begin to say the cross has something to do with this. They love Jesus as a teacher, but he can't be a good teacher and a liar all at the same time because Jesus did not claim to be a reflection of this light. He is the light. He didn't claim to be a representative of God. He claimed to be God. The prophets foretold these things too.
Not only did he claim to be the light or the source rather than a reflection, but in fact he pretty much damned any other light that was out there in so much as he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life.
Yes.
You either come to the Father by me or not at all because there is no other way except me. Now, that is a kind of statement. I mean, he's either got to be a liar, a nutcase, or what he claims to be.
Yeah, they need to stop quoting Jesus. They should not intellectually and honestly take both positions with the same man. You cannot reject everything he did and selectively take what he said. So what we're wanting to do is to take a very honest look at this. I am going to be as objective about this. Barris will help me with that a great deal. He is Mr. Objective on a stick. So the reality of this is what we want to walk through. But here is the other thing, Barris, and this is still just sinking into me. The mystic experience is that of absolute oneness, an absence of sin, and a presence of absolute holiness for all, in all, of all, to all. They say there are no words for this. You can only experience it. Now, they're going to have to find something to do with me because I have words for it. I've been teaching this for a couple of decades now. I have a way to explain exactly how and why what they say is true. I'm not trying to disprove what they say. The cross affirms the mystic. Now, this becomes just really kind of very ironic.
Let me get this right. the mystic, his own religion won't affirm him.
Yes.
But the gospel does.
The gospel does.
The same gospel that gives him the story that he's not so sure he wants to accept.
Yes, which is the only position of spirituality that the mystic totally rejects. So it's like, okay, now anyone that doesn't find this interesting, your interest button doesn't work anymore. I mean, this is really pretty fantastic. It took me a while to observe this irony present in the fact that every mystic's religious roots deny them. They all affirm the religions that deny them. The gospel of grace and peace is the only thing on earth in a spiritual context that affirms them. And the gospel of grace and peace is the only thing the mystic resoundingly rejects. They say all religions are right until you bring up the cross. And that's all dogma. The cross is the only part of it that's not dogma.
All around the world, more and more people have stopped going to church. In the United States alone, almost 3 million walk out of church every year and never go back. Could it be the conflicting message of a loving God that will torture many in a place called hell was just a little too much? Could it be that the gospel is good news for everyone, the whole world, and not just good news for few and bad news for most? Could it be that there is no division of people, some sinners, some saints? The number one reason people gave for leaving church was they did not believe their pastors were telling them the gospel truth. And they were right. If the gospel truth is not good news for everyone, it's not good news for anyone. 1. The Gospel According to Mike by Mike Williams. Available at bookstores, Amazon.com, and other fine retailers.
1 is now available as an ebook at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com for a limited time only at the introductory price of just $3.99. Available also in hardback and paperback.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, I know you got something on your mind today, Michael, that you wanted to talk about, and that was, let me see, what are we going to call it? We're going to call it Questions
I Dared Not Ask.
Questions I Dared Not. It sounds like something that Mummy should have told me or something. Oh, golly. All right. Lead us on, Columbus.
Well, all of this, as it turns out, is a segue from where we are into this. And this all has come up in my process of trying to digest and inform myself about these matters. There were two points in my learning process that were questions I dared not ask. As I was preaching the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace, the realization that God was at peace with everyone leads to other questions and other conclusions. People began to approach me during those years, Barris, this is back in the 90s, and I remember one in particular that stands out above them all. And there was this couple who had been listening to me teach for many years. And some of my friends, and it was so good to see them, and I'm sitting there, and they're telling me how much they love me. But they informed me, Michael, we won't be coming back. And I said, what? And they said, well, we just don't feel we need to come back anymore. And I said, well, why? And they said, well, you don't seem to be embracing the obvious here. And I said, well, what is that? And they said, well, the fact that everyone is already righteous before God, before they, whether they believe in Jesus or not. as I was teaching the gospel of peace, there were people smarter than I who were coming to the obvious conclusion that if God was at peace with the entire world, there had to be a reason for it. And the only conclusion that they could come to was to conclude out of my teaching that everyone on this planet was righteous.
So, of course, you corrected them.
You know, even then, I was already shifting to, if you don't have a question, I don't have an answer or a directive. So I told them I would miss them, and they apologized, but they said, we just don't need any more. We know that everybody is okay with God now. And they walked out. Now, I have to tell you, I was not persuaded of that. The odd thing is that my teaching was persuading people of that, even though I didn't teach on that. To the point to where that the person that I had traveling with me, I had a travel assistant that worked with me during those days. His name is Michael Blanche. And so Michael starts quizzing me, and he says, well, Michael, now I've already got to realize I've lost friends over this. I've lost people that weren't mad at me. It was just they didn't need me anymore. And so here we are, and Michael is bringing up this situation, and he said, now, Mike, so if God is not angry with anyone, and he's quoting my teachings back to me, and he said, wouldn't that mean that everyone is righteous? And I felt this little twinge of anger on the inside of me, and I tamped it down, and I began to explain to him why that is not true. Because this was one of the questions I dared not ask. Just no way. I didn't even like being asked the question. So Michael kept pressing, and I even after I explained, I'm Michael Williams. I am the teacher. I just explained to you why that's not true. And now you're still pressing me about it. And it was about that degree of escalation that was taking place at the moment. And so he saw real quickly that he should drop the subject. And then he brought it up again not too long after that. And it kept tapping this anger inside of me. He was making me angry because this was the question that I dared not even allow myself to ask. This was over the cliff. This was departing from everything about my Christian experience if this were true. So he brought it up again, and the intensity of my reaction was manifold. And I literally forbid him to bring up the subject again. And this was so out of character for me. I mean, I know that Michael was in a bit of shock because the thing that I already prided myself in was people asking questions, but not this one. Any of them, but not this one. Do you understand me?
The question I dared not ask.
The question I dared not ask, how dare you ask? The question that I dare not ask. So I gave him an absolute ultimatum. I told him, I forbid you to bring this up again. It was shaking my very existence for sure. So we had a meeting in Montana, going to a church that eventually was completely dismantled as a result of the introduction of the gospel there. And I remember I was driving. It was on one of those long, 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 endless, endless stretches of highway. And so I saw Michael begin to fidget. I'm driving, and out of the corner of my eye, I see him begin to fidget. And I hear these little sounds coming out of him. Well, this continued on, I bet, for 30 minutes, and the fidgets got worse, and the sounds coming out of him increased. Then he would start to speak. And I would normally say, yeah, what's up, you know? But I deliberately did not respond to him because he knew he had been forbidden to bring this up. And I am just daring him to cross that line. I'll let you sit there. You can fidget. You can all you want.
So you were
really, it's not.
You actually were just the obnoxious word faith preacher in the background that nobody really saw in private. Now the real mic's coming out.
On this point in this situation, I was. Now, before that, I was that way all the time in my Word of Faith days. But you got to realize we were all already in full swing of the gospel revolution here. So
did you know it?
Yes.
Yep.
I knew we were in a gospel revolution, but at the time I thought we were going to be reforming Christianity. That's why I so respect people who still feel they need to be there, they need to stay there, they need to keep going, they need to keep attending. I do understand that, and it's everybody's path individually. And as far as the gospel revolution is concerned, we don't care whether you go to church, don't go to church, whether you tithe or not. This is something that each individual has to follow their own heart through, because you're going to have to find your way out the way you found your way in. But anyway, I was just waiting. And so finally, Michael broke his not-so-silent silence. And he said, I know you told me not to bring this up again. And I cut him off totally at the knees. And I said, yes, I did not tell you not to bring it up. I forbid you to bring it up. And he didn't even get to ask his question. And I said, yeah, but Mike, I said, Michael, we are not talking about it.
That's what I like. You put him right in his place, mate.
Now, oddly enough, this guy still loves me to pieces.
Yeah, very oddly.
In fact, he was visiting here just a few weeks ago, and we sat and laughed about these things. It's so amazing. Goodness, we laughed so hard. I almost fell off the sofa. He reenacts me better than I reenact me. So, but I think he adds a little flavor there that just wasn't there. So that was the first question that I dared not ask, and it was finally presented to me directly by the guy that I had working for me that was traveling as my assistant. The student should learn more than his teacher. I didn't know it at the time, but my students were outpacing me. But I was setting up a framework for them to think in, that they were able to run ahead. It was just a beautiful thing. As I look back on it, it was beautiful. At the time, it was not beautiful.
So when did you actually resolve this? So he couldn't ask you this question. You were not about to face this question down. When did it actually happen? When did the house of cards tumble?
It actually all came down in Hawaii. I was speaking in a church that I'd spoken at many times. Of course, I always loved getting my invitations to Hawaii. And of course, the Lord always wanted me to go sometime in January, February, right around there, you know.
Nice, Lord.
Yes. So, man, I'm telling you, it was just, I couldn't get away from it, especially after this literal confrontation with Michael. And I stayed at the pastor's home, and I was out on the lanai, which in Tennessee, that's a deck. I was out on the lanai, and man, this was just running through me. And he came, and he had his Bible in his hand. The pastor had his Bible in his hand. Michael, he said, I've got something that I need to ask you. And he asked me the question.
Did you forbid him?
Well, he asked a question. He didn't make a statement. Michael's was not a question. Michael had already been vastly persuaded. But no, he brought it up, and there were tears flowing from my eyes, because I knew that this was the moment that, my reality was about to change forever. And I took the verses and I asked him, I said, well, pastor, I said, let's think about it this way. And I started posing the possibility. It says this. What if it really means this? what if that is really what it's saying? That what it's saying, it really means what it's saying. And I said, and what if that is saying what it says it's saying, then would that mean that everybody was made righteous at the cross? And by then he's standing there with tears flowing down his face. And he kind of gave a nod of the head and disappeared back in the door, you know. Probably the next day, we talked about it, and he had a little bit of stiffness in his back, and all of that touching moment was gone. And he had began to say, well, that can't be true. That's just not. And I said, I certainly understand why you think that. I said, I'm there with you, bro, you know. Then the table was turned on me. He said, now, Mike, he said, you've got to tell me that when you speak here in my church that you're not going to bring this up. And I said, well, sure, I won't bring it up. But whatever I was saying before that was causing people to come to that conclusion, of course I was going to teach. That's the way I'd been teaching for the last couple of years. So I go to his church. I teach that night. I did not say anything about that. And we got back home and World War III started. I was thrown out of that house that night. If my memory serves me right, I think it was after midnight.
Christians can be so sweet. And in the name of Jesus now, in the name of Jesus.
I was thrown out of that house. I was told to pack my things and get out. I was dismissed. I was told to leave. And I tried to reason with him, and I told him, I said, but Pastor, I said, I didn't say anything. You're saying that I said things I didn't say, and I didn't say them. But obviously, they were the things that I'd said before I revealed to him where this thought may be going, as the very same statements that I'd made that caused others to come to that conclusion. So this was the question I dared not ask, and he asked the question that I dared not ask. And that moment of clarity out on the lanai was when I knew. So that was the first of the questions that I dared not ask in the process of this gospel revolution. Whether I knew it at the time or not was irrelevant. The gospel of peace and the gospel of grace was revealing itself to me just by virtue of the fact that I was willing to preach it as it is, that it is there in the scriptures. And according to what Jesus said,
you unlocked these chains from my heart, told me I'd been free right from the start, and now I can't get you out of my head. I fell in love with what you said. Said we are holy, all of us holy, and you said the world is one, and you said God is not angry, no judgment waiting for me. You freed me to love. Thank you, my God.
Gospel.
Well, here we are back again, Michael, ready for the second question that Mama never talked to you about. I'm sorry, the second of two questions I dared not ask myself.
Yes.
What was it?
Oh, my goodness.
Firstly, is this going to embarrass anyone?
Christianity.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
Bring it on.
I had another person that was a very good friend of the family. We know this entire family there in Illinois. And one of the sons that I had met several years before called me, this has been 18 years ago, and told me that he would like to talk with me. I was just in shock. I had been around this family, and 10 years after I had met him on the farm, I get a call from him. He told me that he really wanted to talk to me and felt that he should talk to me. So we set a time, and he came down to my home there in Olney, Illinois, and we sat on the living room sofa.
Not the Lily A thing?
The what?
I don't know, that Hawaiian deal you were talking about. You didn't go out in the Lily A again?
Lily A?
Well, what's a porch?
Lanai.
So it wasn't on the lanai, it was in the living room.
No, we were not on the Lily A.
Don't let me get you off track. Sorry, mate, did I disturb you, Pat?
You disturb me on so many levels, I don't even know how to begin.
Oh, you think you're the first to ever say that to me, right?
We were sitting on the sofa in the living room, and he just began to pour his heart out. He was just so burdened with his life. He's 25 years old, and sin was this huge issue for this young man being raised in Catholicism, and oppressive guilt. He told me he was trying to get his life right with God, that he had at one time felt that he had a relationship with God, but because of sin, his attraction to girls and things along this line had really just loaded him up with sin and all these things he needed to get under control in his life. I just listened for probably 30 to 45 minutes, and I said, okay, I said, I hear what you say. And I said, instead of us talking about those things in particular, I said, can I show you something? And he said, well, sure. So I got my Bible out. And I turned to Romans, and I read a little bit about the first and the last Adam. I had embraced righteousness for the entire world at this time. And I read him some in Galatians about falling from grace. I read in about three places, no more than three places, in the New Testament, and as I read through these, he would ask a question. Well, I've never seen that before. What does that mean? And just comments like that. By the end of that time, there were tears flowing down this young man's cheeks with this big smile on his face at the same time. And I have to tell you exactly what he said. He was sitting there, and there was just these waves upon waves upon waves of relief and release coming to his mind. And he said, I don't believe it. This is amazing. I've been looking and looking and searching and looking. I was just looking in the wrong damn place. This is not a scripturally trained young man. He attended Mass. He did what Catholicism told him to do and tried to not do what Catholicism told him not to do. For 2 weeks, we were on the phone constantly, or he was driving back and forth, and we were spending time, and he wanted to know more, 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 and he was learning at lightning speed. So about 2 weeks later, he goes to a phone booth and calls me. He's out on a job, and he was the key to the second question that I dared not ask. So here I am speaking to a young man whom had just learned the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace over the last 2 weeks, calls me and says, now, Mike, so this is this, and this is this, and this is this, right? Yes, that's right, Chris. And so that is that, and that's that, so that's that. Is that right? Yes, Chris, that's correct. You understand it perfectly. So then if this is this, and that's that, then there is no such thing as sin. And there was a long pause of silence on both ends of the phone. But
you forbid him, right?
Not him, no. He had not been forbidden, and I wasn't about to. I had grown along with...
Oh, you learned that lesson by this time, huh?
I had grown along with my pupils by this time. After embracing that the entire world was righteous through the work of the cross, the gospel of peace and gospel of grace. This issue of sin was breaking waves over my mind, for sure. There was there were moments that I could feel this coming to me. But it was a question that I dared not ask. Is there any such thing as sin anymore? It was just this real moment where that in a few seconds I knew that my response to him once again would change my life forever.
Was that feeling, because you said the same thing happened when you were talking to this pastor about the other question. Was this a sensation in yourself, it's time to bite the bullet on this one? Is that what happened?
I can't even say that it was that. It was just such a very natural moment. It was not even a decision to try or anything. It has just, everything had just come to this moment. Chris was standing there with a big smile on his face with his great big door open. I just knew that I was either going to walk through it or not. And yes, these were life-altering moments for a Word of Faith preacher.
So there you are. You knew that you're on the threshold of something.
Once again. Interesting. So the thing that I have loved about my journey is that I've been well aware when life was about to change forever, each and every time. And it has been a deliberate choice each and every time. Some I've kicked and screamed till I got to that point, but it has always been a deliberate choice based on what was, this is scriptural. It may be taking me far and away from everything I've ever known, but I cannot refute this. I didn't hear this from a theologian. I didn't hear this in some debate. I was hearing this from a 25-year-old Catholic boy who only knew Catholicism and its traditions that was enforced upon him through his childhood. And the only thing he knew about the gospel was what he had learned in the last 2 weeks. And now here he was making a statement. He didn't ask me anything, actually. He said, if what you're saying is true, then this conclusion is also true. He said, there is no such thing as sin. So there was the silence. I've always had a real awareness that once I stepped into the gospel of peace, a free fall had started. When Michael Blanche challenged me and others about everyone being righteous, this is where I wanted off of this free fall. I didn't want to fall anymore. I knew we were about to hit bottom. You don't want to continue a free fall when you know that there's a big splat coming up. So I made it through the issue of that we're all righteous, and I was still in a free fall. I hadn't found the bottom. I was beginning to enjoy the free fall. It was actually turning into something enjoyable. It seemed as though there were people constantly offering me a branch, a stick, a something. Mike, you don't have to free fall anymore. You can come here. You can rest here. You can come over here. You can be secure here. You can embrace this. This church will accept you. These people will do it. This will happen. In this one, though, with Chris, I was so comfortable with free fall by then that when he said this, I knew that I had no problem with it. That's been 18 years ago since I was taught by a 25-year-old Catholic boy that there is no such thing as sin. That started a friendship that has lasted to this very day, and the free fall continued.
Now, both of these questions were resolved as a result of people bringing you your own teaching and saying, well, if that's true, then this must also hold.
Yes, that's why I call them the questions that I dared not ask. The gospel revolution for me has not only revolutionized the way I exist on this planet as a result of resolving really these two major things about righteousness and sin, but it's odd that the people through whom these things became resolved are lifelong friends now. I have no question in my mind if I'm in trouble, who will come help me? I know. I have no question. They know the same the other way around also. But that's what the gospel revolution seems to do, Barris. It seems to really cement people's hearts together in a way that you can't really describe. I don't even know how to say it. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the gospel creates a mutual respect.
Well, the walls come down, for one.
Yes, they do.
The people who were, one day they were someone that you despise or see as different than you, suddenly now they're you.
Yes, very much
and,
true.
And you suddenly can find the place inside you to respect and love.
Yeah, absolutely. So here we are, 18 years after the fact of my conversation with Chris about the fact there is no sin, and then our last phone call was about how to fix ribs. So.
Wow. So those two questions. The first one again was,
is it possible that the work of the cross made everyone righteous?
And the answer is,
yes, he did make everyone righteous.
And the second question is,
is it possible that the issue of sin is gone at the cross, that it's never been a subject, an issue again for the human race?
Well, that's a tougher one. And the answer is?
And there is no such thing as sin.
Well, where there is no law,
there is no law, there is no sin. There is no transgression. So, now the odd thing about all of this, these two questions that I dared not ask, these are the two questions the mystics dare not ask.
And yet these are the two questions that make the gospel really good. I mean, when I was in Christianity, there was nothing really good about the gospel. We would talk about it being good news, and we'd pretend it was good news, but where's the good news in 90% of the people that God created being tormented forever? There ain't much good news in that, unless it's for you, the lucky winner.
Yes. The issue of righteousness being something that is dealt out by measure of obedience or belief, and the issue of sin never being resolved. It's a constant issue in the life of the believer. The blood of Christ that redeemed us also has the power to purge our conscience from dead works. The confession of sin is a dead work. Trying to obey to be righteous is a dead work. So these two things being removed from the knowledge of the person who knows Christ and knows the power of his resurrection, the only way you can know the power of his resurrection is to know that your righteousness has been replaced with his righteousness, and to know that your sin no longer exists, that Christ was the propitiation for our sin, but not for ours only, but for the sin of the whole world. And that sin is now gone. So here we have this wonderful understanding of the ultimate conclusion that the mystics come to, yet they completely reject the only process by which it has happened. I understand it a little bit. If I found a diamond and picked up that diamond, I might not be interested in the process that caused that diamond to be a diamond. But the fact of it is, if you're enjoying the diamond, there were things that caused that diamond to become a diamond. Whatever you're enjoying in life, I mean, this is back to just basic elements even. It is the merger of things together that have caused things to be as they are today. I'm glad everybody gets to enjoy the diamond, but there is a place where the diamond came from. There is a process that happened that caused the diamond to be the diamond. I don't understand the need to almost revel against the process it took to make the diamond to be able to embrace the diamond. For the gospel revolution, literally what we have done is we found the diamond by finding the knowledge of how the diamond was produced. We really didn't know the diamond existed, but we did find out through knowledge, through research, my goodness, if this keeps going the way that it's going, this could result in a diamond. This could actually produce a diamond. This could produce righteousness for everyone. This could mean that there is no such thing as sin, which is the diamond that the mystics have found. But there's a wonderful story about how this diamond came to be. And I would love for them to know the story. I see a struggle in these guys to try to replicate their experience to keep this diamond shining. And the only thing I can tell you, I don't go through that struggle. I've got the same diamond. I don't think it's a different diamond than what the mystic has. But I do nothing to try to keep this diamond shining. Christianity, in what little bit they do find about it, they go through this struggle, you know. Eva was just telling me about her pastor friend that has to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go lead morning prayer. You know, whether it's chanting or isolation or separation or going through some type of process to make that real every day of their lives. But these two questions that I dared not ask are the things that I would love to be able to share. I'm hoping to gain enough understanding of the mystics. I already know their religions do not know the gospel, and I know why they don't know. I want to know why they know the results of the gospel, but they can't embrace the thing that brought the gospel.
Gospel Revolution.
Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Again?
Nothing up my sleeve. Presto! Ooh, don't know my own strength.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
If the Bible is all about Jesus, don't you think that most churches would mention him with at least the same frequency as they mention all of their favorite dogmas and doctrine and all those rules of your particular brand of religion? Tithing, moralism, Old Testament law, abortion, gays, politics, all hail the leader, persecution, the end times, don't forget the bloody rules, God's perfect will for your life, fleeing youthful lusts, rock music, speaking in tongues, the coming kingdom, worldliness and how to escape, but those pesky rules, don't forget them. Heresy, prophecy, soul-winning missions, offerings, wrong doctrine, right doctrine. And don't forget all those bloody rules. Relationships, long hair, short hair, dyed hair, liberalism, greasy grace, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, dispensationalism, and rules, rules, never-ending bloody rules. And Calvinism, Arminianism, a missionary service, Sunday school, swearing and cussing, besetting sins, sexual purity. Oh, and give us some more rules, won't you? False prophets, confession, dress code, mixed swimming, dancing, movies, television, dating. Oh, and did I mention the freaking rules?
Gospel Revolution.
So, Mike, this is the third and last week of our pledge drive. How'd it go?
It is, Barris, it is the third and last week, and this has been a successful pledge drive. I think it doesn't officially close until next week, so you certainly are welcome to call in. I think our one-time goals have been met, and I think we still are wanting to increase the monthly. It takes so very little of increase on a monthly to change this whole picture. So we'll get an update from Jeff and put that in here also so that you'll know exactly where we are. But I think that the only thing that we're lacking is to increase our monthlies as much as we actually needed to on this one.
And no sooner said than done, here I have on the line Jeff Robertson. G'day, Jeff. How did our pledge drive go this year, mate?
I apologize for my voice. Laryngitis, I get it around this time of year. Well, every pledge drive is different. This particular pledge drive, we needed a minimum of 8 in one-time pledges. But the original goal was 10,000. And for one-time pledges, we did reach $7,500. We were a little short on the one-times that we needed. The unusual part was the monthly pledges, where people pledge to give something every month, and where they either make a new monthly pledge or increase their monthly pledge. Last time around, it went kind of funny, too. Our goal was $300 last time.
Increased monthly pledges.
Yeah, yep. Increased or new monthly pledges. Our goal last time around was $300, and towards the end of the pledge drive, we only made it about halfway there. And then all of a sudden, that last week and the week after, the rest of the pledges came in, and we went to over $400, and our goal was $300. This time around, we really needed $500, and it was the first time where we didn't even get halfway there. We only got $50 in new or increased monthly pledges.
What do we need those new pledges for, Jeff?
Well, Mike and I were looking at the budget, and we were going over what our annual expenses are, the expenses throughout the year. And one thing Mike noticed was we're just a little tight by a few $100 per month. That was just going to cover the way the expenses have changed over the past year. So it was a little tough. If we had gotten the 500 new monthly pledges, we'd be in a much more solid spot, and we could continue doing what we've been doing in Kenya and more, probably. But again, every pledge drive is different. There will be another one next quarter.
Now, you told me a couple of weeks ago what kind of expenses we outlay, just in some of the simple things. I think you were talking about postage, years worth of postage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, last year, just in postage, I didn't take an accurate count, but I was kind of watching last year what I was spending on postage. And I spent probably close to $10,000 just on postage last year. But that doesn't even include what we've spent on FedEx and UPS charges and things like that. There's a lot of operational costs that we have every month and throughout the year. And that was just one of them.
Now, when I asked you why we don't do more business on the internet, you had a really interesting answer. What was it, Jeff?
We definitely have at least three different audiences, three different groups that we are reaching. There is some overlap of each group, but the majority of each group is not at all affiliated or related to the other group. We have an entire group of people who receive our emails, but not all of them listen to our PowerCasts. We have people who listen to our PowerCasts but don't receive our emails. We have a group on Facebook that only some of them listen to our PowerCasts, and some of them receive our emails, but most of them don't. So there's some overlap with every group, but we have three distinct groups just on the internet alone who are distinctly different and unaffiliated with each other.
And then we've got a group of people who only go near a computer when they're walking through a shopping mall.
Yeah, pretty much. Some of the people who listen to our PowerCast, they don't even own the computer they're listening on. They listen while they're at work because they don't even have a computer at home. Oh, and then there's all our people who don't even get on the computer. We have a mailing list of 800 people, and most of them don't even get on a computer, don't own one. They're not on the internet. So that's our fourth audience or group that we reach out to.
And we have quite a few donors in that group, don't we?
Yeah, they would make up probably 25 to 30% of our donors.
That's a big chunk.
It's a big chunk.
So Mike said something about your phone hasn't shut down, and if someone wants to ring in the next week, they surely can, even though the pledge drive is over.
Yeah, no problem with that. And they will get the thing, depending on what the pledge is, they will also get the thank you gifts that go along with that.
Will they get the prayer cloths?
Yeah, prayer cloths, and I'll put some water in a bottle and bless it too if they need it.
I was kind of hoping for a crystal eagle to sit on top of the television, but is that in the works somewhere, mate?
I'll have to order it.
Hour of Flower.
I'd just like to thank everybody for every year, every pledge drive. We have a lot of people who are dedicated to the pledge drives. And every pledge drive, we get new pledges. Everybody is really devoted to this cause. They want to keep the message going. It always astounds me what people do because they love this message and what they will do because they love this message. Thank you to everybody for that.
And one last word to all of our gospel revolutionaries out there, Jeff.
I love you all, and I think you all know it, and I always enjoy talking to each and every one of you. And for those of you I haven't talked to, I hope to talk to you soon someday.
What number would they ring to do that, mate?
They can call me at 352-569-4889.
And that's Jeff Robertson, the administrative guru for the Gospel Revolution down there in Florida. Thanks, Jeff.
And Barris, here are the people who gave in to this pledge drive on this spring quarter.
And here they are. Let me see, I've got a long list here. So we start with Tom and Linda Wilby from Fredericton, New Brunswick, Robert Vacanti from Ottertail, Minnesota, Wolfgang and Helga Dykerhoff from Bluffton, Alberta, Canada, Jerry and Susan Berman from Longwood, Florida, Cookie Davy Duck from Castor, Alberta, Dwayne and Ruth Darku from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Billy Thompson from Wachuca City, Arizona, James Taylor from Calhoun, Louisiana, Albert Vitali from Gainesville, Georgia, Michael Camelotis from Chandler, Arizona. See, Mike? We're getting it there, mate. Walter Wilson from Selma, Alabama, Wayne Jensen from Bingham Lake, Minnesota, Thomas and Linda Villand from Madison, Wisconsin, Mr. Anonymous there again from Edmonton, Alberta, Deidre Simpson from Kelowna, British Columbia, Suzanne Johnson from Fitchburg, Wisconsin, Pat and Ted Winsett from Decatur, Alabama. Hey, Ted, I've left messages, mate. Answer your phone. love you guys. Tim Keene from Rosedale, Virginia, Bud and Ruth Ramsey from Park River, North Dakota, Betty Cochran from Atoka, Oklahoma, Dale Van Sickle from Clyde, North Carolina, Arthur Wirch from Brandon, Manitoba, Pep Washburn from Marshfield, Wisconsin, James and Gail Gustafson from Estevan, Saskatchewan, Michael Schaffstall from Carmel, Indiana. Where am I? I get lost so purely easily. This started in about grade one and it never really went away. Michael Price in Scarborough, Maine. Robert Jones from Clarksville, Indiana. Kerry and Weta Waitman from Whitehall, Montana. Jeff and Carolyn Cotton from Lawrenceville, Georgia. Elizabeth Ward from Monroe, Washington. Jeff Mercer from Laverne, Tennessee. Doug Bowman from Little Rock, Arkansas. Adrienne Billing from Red Deer, Alberta. Richard and Pat Salonen from, yeah, from that place. It's Waukesha. Okay. Hey, they're not from Waukesha anymore, Jeffrey. I think they're from somewhere else now. It's probably going to be somewhere where the name is a real lot easier to say than Waukesha. Thomas Tonsky from Canton, Ohio. Jackie Barnard from Manchester, Tennessee. He's not either. Where'd you get this list from, Jeff? Jackie Barnard is from Wachuca City, Arizona. Glenn Buchholz from Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. Now, if you listened for your name and you didn't find it, you'd be right, and your name must be one of these people. Buddy Smith from Farmerville, Louisiana. Laura and Daryl Stewart from Red Deer, Alberta. And Michael Bond from Marietta, Georgia. So you see, we really did remember you after all. Now, speaking of Georgia, want to remind you that we have meetings coming up in Georgia. Michael will be over there, and I'm trying to fill in time while I find the blessed email. Anyway, young Michael's going to be over there, and it'll be, around about then, and probably in that place. Oh, crikey, Dick. I'm going through my emails right now. Do you need help with your mortgage? No. Hello, I'm a banker from Nigeria and you have been left $1 million. No. Do you need help with your... Oh, who's been talking? Out of school. Oh, here it is. Reminder to plug Georgia meetings on the show. Thanks very much, Jeff. That was very good. I really found that quickly. The 2012 Southeast Conference will be held in, are you ready? Gainesville, Georgia. He has written down brackets. That's actually, he didn't say Gainesville, Georgia. He said Gainesville, GA. Gah. And in brackets, he said, for you, Barris, that's Georgia. May 17, 18, and 19. For more information, please call Jeff Robertson at 352-569-4889. And I want to say a huge thank you, as we all do, to all of those people who have given into this pledge drive. Thank you.
The things we look at change. Can you feel true? Call you. When we bought the lie, we sold our soul. Gave our life away. A million pain remains the same. Oh, all that man went down. Traveling down the road alone, do you still believe your eternal
And so it is that we must leave you, folks, but not before I once again say a very big thank you to all those gospel revolutionaries out there who make it possible to bring you this PowerCast each and every week. If you'd like to join us in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, just call our office at area code 352-569-4889 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us at 123-456-4097. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and you can catch us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Remember, no Christians were harmed in the making of this program, and for a quick fix, night or day, our radio station is broadcasting all the gospel all the time at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so it's good night, whew, at last, from myself, Barris Bartlett, at the GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee, and from the GR headquarters in Houston, Texas.
This is Michael Williams. Good night, folks. Thank you so much for listening. And also, let me say thank you so much for participating in the pledge drive. And once again, we get to tell you it was a success. My goodness, you folks are amazing. And we love you so very much. The doors are not closed, though. If you have an experience, we don't care whether it was a moment of enlightenment, whether or not you had a moment of clarity and suddenly you just want to put some funds into the Gospel Revolution, Jeff's number has not changed. I promise you, it hasn't. So thank you each and every one for what you have done, what you do, and what you've always done so very well. We're getting some awful good news out to some awfully wonderful people.
So remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Whole lot better.